I'm going to take, make sure my phone's out here so I do my 20 minutes. Just to give you a little bit of my background, it's somewhat of a, that's my part-time job you see up there. I still am full-time in the fire service, serving as fire captain in prevention and inspections in Sandwich. And I got dragged into BU in 2008 with their new graduate program in healthcare emergency management. And all of my research and work has been in this field of mainly public health disaster preparedness. So what we're going to talk about today is, and I'm going to use a couple of examples of where I actually failed in the planning process during a couple of our pod site exercises. So, of course, when you have a failure, you are told by your boss to find a solution. So I spent, and I still spending almost 2 years on research to come up with a solution that's amenable to everybody and that is user-friendly. See if I can get this to work. Okay. So quickly, just a little background. Are there different cultures and special populations in your community? Everybody has different cultures in their jurisdiction. And again, you have to plan for 100% of your population. You cannot plan for 98% of the population when we're talking about disaster management. Oops. So again, are all cultures ethnic in origin? And I tell my students this. Is it all ethnic? When we talk about culture, there's different cultures. City of Boston has 5 different cultures within the city itself, different neighborhoods. You have different populations. So cultures are not always ethnic in origin, but they have to be addressed in your emergency planning. So in 2008, like I said, we did a large drive-through flu clinic and for the population, and we used HCEP and ICS. And basically, I was a planning section chief, and I planned for 99% of the population. But I had a hard of hearing citizen and a family who only spoke Portuguese come through and we had nothing for them. And there's nothing worse when you're in the command post when you have somebody come in looking for services and you have nothing. And of course my boss is looking at me saying, why didn't we plan for this? So I vowed at that point that this would never happen again, that we would be very strict in our planning and our planning cycles to make sure we account for every single potential person that's in the population. So again, we had no interpreter, and the CAPE has a good organization called CORD, CAPE Organization for the Rights of the Disabled, and we did not involve them in the planning process in 2008. And in the after-action report with the higher-ups and the command staff, it was generally viewed as a failure. Now, when you vaccinate 2,000 people and have very little complaints, on the surface it looked very good. But again, in the after-action meetings, it was, why didn't we plan for those 5 people? Now remember, you can deliver perfect services to everybody. If you screw up on one, that's the one they remember. So again, I vowed that this would never happen again and we'd find a mechanism to make it work. This is just a quick thing I do with my students all the time. President Bush gives the hook 'em horns hand gesture in Italy. And does anybody know what that means in Italian culture? Your wife is cheating on you. Always be careful with hand gestures and cultures and just in general, how you interact, how you say things. We tell our people all the time, and I view autism as a culture, and we have a special needs school, and I tell our guys, and you know, when they're responding there, I said, you have to be cognizant of the culture of these people, okay? You have to approach them a certain way. You will, and I tell these guys, especially in emergency response, the parents know more than you will ever know about some of these situations and their background. So, again, with culture, you have to be very, very careful. And you want to educate yourself, and you want to have it in your plan, but you also don't want to dismiss it, okay? And, again, I cannot emphasize that enough. So, in 2010, I took a stab, and I said, I'm going to put this in operations, and because that's my background. I'm ICS certified, I'm on an incident management team, and I have ops section chief qualifications, and that's where I'm comfortable. So I built out this huge thing. It looked great, looked really good, until we started to fill the positions and realized it was entirely too large. It doesn't belong in operations. It's a request. If you're making a request for a specific skill set, it's going to go through logistics. So this was my initial stab. And as you can see, we have areas for cultural awareness, diversity manager, disabilities unit leader, ADA compliance manager, all those things that you want to have in your response plan. We even got down into GIS, and we had a couple of people that went into GIS, and we did cultural GIS mapping where we actually mapped out the demo of the population with our GIS folks, and it's intel for us. And we actually use this in Hurricane Irene, because we are a coastal community. We're able to demo out our 65-plus population, and if they were in the 100-year floodplain using GIS, which is great, because we had 112 people that I knew we had to account for during an evacuation. Again, it's a culture. It's not necessarily ethnic, but it is a culture. And that position proved to be very valuable. So then I said, well, I can't do this alone. There's a gentleman sitting in the back of the room who's partnered with me, Guadalupe Pacheco. He's in the back from the Office of Minority Health. And I heard him speak 2 years ago at a conference, and we got to talking about how can we put something together that may be beneficial for everybody. So we came up with this project list, and it's a language interpretive services training. It's a collaboration we're working on right now with the City of Boston Public Health, Office of Minority Health, Los Angeles County, their MRC folks. And I'll explain how this all works and how it's put together. It's a collaborative program looking at how to include language and cultural services preparedness into the ICS, or Incident Command System. And our goal in summer 2012 is an exercise to test the applicability. And it's Operation Gentle Voice. That's one of my other backgrounds. I'm an exercise designer. So any project that I get, I draw an exercise and test it. That's basically my field work. So what we did is we got together, and on the website here for this conference, you'll see a PDF of all the job action sheets that we put together for all these positions to be able to test them out. So this is what we came up with. Looking at it, logistically it makes sense. We trimmed it down. We added a third branch into logistics. We added three unit leaders under that branch director, which gives us a good span of control, 3-to-1. And then if you look from left to right, we'll start with cultural support. I took the three areas in my community that I knew I was going to need help with if we had a big disaster, whether it's public health or man-made or natural. We needed language folks, language interpreters. And we have more than one different resource. It's not a strike team. It's a task force. So we utilized what we call a language task force, and we put somebody in charge of that. The religious aspects, we had 10 different religions just in my little community, which I wasn't aware of. We had a task force leader who was the Catholic parish priest. He got all the religious folks together, and basically they formed the religious task force. And then the ethnic awareness folks, we engaged with the Portuguese and Brazilian community, the Irish community, because we have a lot of folks that summer, they're summer workers. And you really don't know what you have in your backyard until you do a full investigation. And we were stunned as to the different cultures and languages that were residing in our jurisdiction, so we put together the ethnic awareness task force. Again, we did the cultural GIS, which GIS in general is excellent. When you add a cultural tip to it, it's even better, because you can really break out your different populations. And as a planner or an operations person, that's good intel to have. That's good intel to ask, where are my breakouts? What's my demo in this certain part of the city or this part of the town? Because again, if you're going to open shelters, multiple shelters in multiple areas, you're going to be able to disperse those language translation assets more appropriately. You're not going to send a Spanish interpreter to the Irish part of town where the shelter would be. That's just misuse of resources. So again, a lot of pre-planning goes into it, a lot of mapping, and then we can take a look and see where we're going to distribute. And again, the unit leader does have a mapping manager, and they, all they do is the demo, demographic stuff for us, and they just churn that stuff out. And then on the ADA side, American with Disabilities Act compliance unit leader, we put, and this is the CORD folks that I mentioned earlier, these are the people that are going to take a look at your shelters. They're going to make sure you drive through, and just to show you how detailed this gets, in our drive-through flu clinic, we had a wheelchair van mechanic. Can you tell me where to find those? Somebody that fixes hydraulic lifts in wheelchairs. And I would have never thought of that. And we brought in the CORD folks, and they said, well, I'm going to need this, this, and this. A visual impairment specialist, a hard of hearing translator, a mechanic. I said, fine. And in fact, we even put a vet in for any seeing eye dogs or animal dogs. Those four assets form the functional needs task force. And again, from a command point of view, it's very comforting to know that these things are addressed when they come up. There's nothing worse when you're running an operation and you have to call an audible. You have nothing to call an audible with. And all I would have to do at this point, if I'm running operations, is do a lateral request to logistics and tell them what's needed. And then it goes right down the pipeline. And then it comes right back up the pipeline with an ETA. So when we did it last year, 3 years later, we had all bases covered. And there was nothing better than somebody coming in for a language request, and it was Eastern European, which we had about 0.1% on our demo. But we had a professor from the community college who speaks Russian, who we kind of roped into our MRC, and I'll get to that in a second. And he was there to do the translation. It was a beautiful thing, let me tell you, compared to what I had dealt with 3 years prior. To be able to have that in our back pocket, somebody who basically could handle that for us, it's great. And what it does is engages some NGOs and people that normally don't use ICS all the time. We're able to give them a unit leader position with an MRC person, and you let them, it's a good training opportunity for them. So this has worked very, very well. We did use it in Irene. Hurricane Irene, and it was great. And again, so this gentle voice that we're looking to do, and there's some folks in the room that are part of this, the Henry Jackson Foundation at the National Center for Disaster Medicine and Public Health, LA County MRC, Boston MRC, Minority Health, and if we can get Montgomery County on board. And what we're planning on doing is we research, recruit, and test the need and response capability for medical interpreters as part of the Medical Reserve Corps. Basically, where is this coming from? I am in the city of Boston, and hospitals don't share very well. A lot of people don't share very well, to be honest with you. But if there's a need for a medical interpreter and another hospital has it, they're not going to let that asset go. That person's working. So we said, what if we made a recruitment push for specific medical interpreters to be engaged in the Medical Reserve Corps? We can activate them if needed in their off time. And then we can back end them into the facility to assist with medical interpretation if needed. And that's where this push is going. This will end with a report, a tabletop, functional exercises, including incident action plan and after action report, and recommendations for MRC. And again, the potential cost will be determined. And again, we want to test the MRC's ability to recruit and train medical interpreters. The city of Boston has 75 bilingual MRC folks. 20 are Spanish-speaking, and out of those 20, 75% are nurses. And I said to our MRC person, well, you could potentially pull an RN off the health line to put them in as a medical interpreter if need be. And I shouldn't say medical interpreter. I should say they can interpret. Medical interpreter is a certified position. So looking at that, we wanted to potentially provide a training platform both to educate the MRC folks that are bilingual on the necessity for translation services during disaster, and how can we make this work for those people already there and those that aren't that we can reach out to. Those folks that have a language skill set, they may have nothing else, they have a language skill set that we can recruit into the Medical Reserve Corps, that we can activate and utilize. College professors are great. They all retire to my community. I've already scoped them out, believe me. I've sniffed out a whole bunch and asked and said, listen, we're not going to ask you to give somebody a shot. We're not going to ask you to do CPR unless they drop right in front of you. We are going to ask you if you can help us out if we have an issue with a language translation need, that you could step up and help us out. One of the other objectives is to promote the Center for Linguistic and Cultural Competency as a disaster resource, including the use, and we're looking at an iPhone application. There's a whole bunch of iPhone stuff out there. We're going to toy with a couple of things. One of them is with GIS, again, that GIS mapping. And then, again, we want to promote this, the addition to Public Health ICS, the third logistics branch. Okay, we have service and support branches, which everybody knows about and they utilize, but this would be a special, and that's why we call it special services. It would be utilized for that reason. So I tried to keep it within the 15-minute time frame. Again, I'll just reiterate what we're looking to do. Focus on Medical Reserve Corps for language translation. And all of you now, wherever you come from, think about what assets you have at play right now in your own community. And if you could get language interpretive services quickly, whether it's a pod site distribution, a flu clinic, a regular fire, multi-alarm fire that displaces a whole bunch of people, where are you going to get those assets from? They may not come as freely or as quickly as you think. And one of the things that we do for exercises is call-out exercises. Oh, yeah, I'm on the MRC. I can respond. We have 1,700 people listed in the city of Boston MRC. Do a call-out. make it 30. What's your actual numbers that you have to work with? And that's one of the things that we do with this. We found that, so far, language interpreters are readily available. More readily available than you would think. A lot of them are educators. They teach in the schools, they teach at universities, and they seem to answer the call out because they know, with talking with them, that's all they're doing is what they're doing already. They're just going to be interpreting languages for us in the disaster. Okay? So look for our report in another year or so. We're diligently working on it. I appreciate your time and attention with this. My contact information is up there. Please don't circulate my cell phone to too many people. But I'm very good about responding to emails and inquiries. I have no problem doing that, okay? Enjoy the rest of the conference, and thank you very much for your time.